Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. We are coming to you live August 8th, 2010. If you're listening between 5 and 8 Pacific time, you're hearing us live. We're glad you're here. Lots going on. Oh, my goodness. You can't believe how the planet is changing. It's really, really unbelievable. And we're here getting to witness it. You can join us anytime tonight, 415 762-1161, 415-762-1161. Hey, on August 7th, magnetic lines around sunspot 1093 became unstable and erupted. That was yesterday, producing a strong M1-class solar flare. Earlier in the week, there was a C-class flare that caused a solar tsunami and winds over 550 kilometers per second. Right now, they're about 412 kilometers per second. Hang on a second. We got a little bit of a technical problem. It says the main line is no longer active. That's okay because we're not mainstream here. So that's okay if it doesn't, if it isn't active. Voice pulse is how we're coming to you live over the lines. Just want to make sure everyone is there. We also have several other ways you can get a hold of us, of course, 415-287-0074. Those of you calling west of Earth, 530-413-4511. And those of you off-planet, you can reach us at 530-413-4515. Off-planet, 4515. On-planet, 4511. And west of Earth is 415-762-1161. They all work, so you can reach us. We've got the antennas out there, and you can reach us all night. I wouldn't keep your craft too far out there, though, because tonight the Perseid meteor shower is happening. It's caused by debris left from Comet Swift-Tuttle. It exploded probably a century ago. And every 133 years, the huge comet swings through the inner solar system and leaves behind a trail of dust and gravel. And we've been passing through it every year for the last dozen years. When Earth passes through the debris, specks of comet stuff hit the atmosphere at about 140,000 miles an hour. So if you're out there, you want to leave your ship just inside the atmosphere. Let those things burn up above you, and that way you can listen to the whole program tonight. There were 25 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, only two over 5.0. The planet is still relatively quiet out there. They're calling it the spill that never was. Pensacola beaches rebounded so white that they look like they did in 1850. That's right, not a tourist in sight. The scare press, they're calling it, made it sound like the sand would never recover, and yet there is not a tar ball to be found anywhere. Who are we to believe? Well, I would be willing to talk about it tonight if you like. You can reach us on planet again. 415-762-1161, west of the planet, 415, I'm sorry, is 530-413-4515 and off planet 530-413-4511. Make sure to dial that into your universal translator because we only have one language working here tonight, small board. So make sure you come in English if you can. It's interesting about the BP oil spill. Lots of bad press. And I mean, from health professionals. You heard, Dr. Tom here a couple of weeks ago talk about some of the health problems that they're seeing down in Florida, respiration problems, skin rashes, flu-like symptoms. Louisiana, of course, has had lots of things happening. So where is the oil? Where has it gone? Well, they're using some nice dispersant called Core Exit, and what it's designed to do is make the oil heavier than seawater. And so the oil simply just sinks to the bottom. Now, the funny thing about the bottom of the ocean, it's deep, of course, there, about a mile. Not much sunlight, not much bacteria, and so the oil lasts for a long, long time. And it's ingested by all those critters that like to live on the sandy bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. Most of them are delectable, and we like to pile them in huge quantities with hot sauce and steam on our plate. I don't think we'll be doing that anytime soon or anytime in the near future because they're covered in thick, tarry, cold, unbacteria, biodegraded oil. So we'll see how things change, how the press is so wonderful at taking us from the point of disaster to the point of paradise as they pave it from one end to the other, parking stripes and all. We have some good news, though. The publisher is moving things along, should receive the galley copy here in about a week. If they've done it correctly and everything is straight and narrow, as we say in the publishing business, then we will release that book to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Borders, Walden Books, all those wonderful places you like to shop for printed material. And at the website, rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. Of course, you don't have to wait. You can get the ebook now with all the color drawings and photographs that are in the book. And you get 25% off the printed version when it comes out, and you'll be first in line when the audiobook comes out. Yes, we're working on it slowly but surely, but right now we're in Wheaties mode. So as soon as we catch up on that, we'll catch up on the audiobook for you. Also, don't forget Twitter is alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff not all day, but a couple times a day as we approach several important announcements with various things that are happening, both with companies, technologies, and in the news. So go to Twitter at X Squared Radio, sign up, follow us, keep up with the stuff, because remember, it's all local, and you're all sourced, so you might as well join us on there. Also, we have a couple of very, very good sponsors I want to tell you about. The reason we're here and on the air is because of them, but we're also very careful about this. You know, we don't sell gold or shoes or mattresses or insurance here. We sell the stuff that matters, things that you need. Things that you can put in your space, stuff to help you out. One is our favorite emergency preparedness company, 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust, who is an EMT fireman, and the company was founded by emergency management systems professionals. And we're not talking about FEMA. We're talking about people that really understand the street level of being prepared. I encourage you, as you see in the news, floods and fires in Russia. We've had earthquakes. We've had hurricanes. We're going to have a storm season starting in about a month. One of the things you don't want to do, especially if you have the wherewithal and the warning and, of course, the place to get prepared, is to not burden those emergency services that will help all those other people that aren't prepared. So we want you to be prepared, and that is the best way to stay alive, stay comfortable, stay healthy. You know, one small incision, one small scrape, one splinter, one stepping on a nail,
without the right preparedness, you might as well live in a third world country. You're a long way from medical care, and infections can set in so quickly in areas that get flooded because of cholera, because of various bacteria floating in the water, wetness that can't get dry, or in wet clothes for days and days. We need you to be prepared. So go to 1-800-PREPARE.com, get us a good first aid kit, get a 72-hour kit so you have the food and water. And by the way, it'll stay good for up to 25 years. So once you buy this kit, you can hold on to it. Put it in a closet. Put it in an old kid's book bag. Keep it by the front door closet. When things go bad, and they go bad rather quickly, not slow enough for you to go to the cabinet and select your favorite pre-prepared foods, the stuff in a grocery bag, put in your minivan, and hit the freeway unfettered. When they go bad quickly. You're going to need to grab that bag and go. This is what I mean by emergency preparedness. Don't be out there huddled in some parking garage under a rented blanket with a can of Beanie Weenies. You might as well get the good stuff, because you can, and now you know where. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Also, our good friend Maureen St. Germain. Those of you that have read Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years, if you haven't, you can go to arkofmillionsofyears.com. The trilogy is still on sale. Very, very good packaging deal. We package all three books together, consolidate the shipping, get it to you at a great price. Over 1,500 pages nonfiction research done on the 2012 events coming, and also a fantastic history lesson. If you like the History Channel, you might as well have the right stuff, not the hype and animated things, but the real deal. There's over 250 pictures and drawings in those three books. You don't find those in books very often. We did that because we sent print-ready PDFs to our publisher, so we were able to get those kinds of quality workmanship to you at arkofmillionsofyears.com. So go there and pick that up. But in Volume 3, we also talk about Flower of Life meditation. Those of you familiar with Drunvalo Melchizedek, his writings, his teachings, his discoveries in this, it is great. And we use it because it's a very fast, efficient type of meditation. It is good for busy people. It's very practical. And the 17 breaths will drop you into a very effective and workable meditation. And you can use it in everyday life. We teach the 18th breath, so if you want to get that, you're going to get it in the book Remembering the Future. Also, it's going to recommend that you buy a certain CD called the Merkaba 2 Meditation CD. It's posted on our website, it's posted at rememberingthefuture.com, and it's posted at arkofmillionsofyears.com. We want you to pick up the CD. Why? Because Maureen St. Germain does the very best job on the planet with this CD in guiding you verbally through the meditation. Each time you meditate, you simply put the CD on, either put speakers or put headphones on, drop into the meditation. After a few dozen tries, you'll have the meditation down, all the mudras, the breathing, the timing. It is wonderful, and I found that she does the very best job. You can pick up that CD for yourself by clicking the link at X Squared Radio or at arkofmillionsofyears.com or at rememberingthefuturebook.com. Or you can go to her website directly, MaureenSaintGermain.com, but we like you to go through our website so she knows it came from us. And that is how the sponsorship works. That's how you get our program. And that's how you get the good stuff that gets you prepared, both on the meditation end and on the emergency preparedness end. Again, before we begin the program tonight, don't forget about clicking on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio. This is a short 30-minute version of the program. It's free. It's no subscription required. It is kind of a primer. It's very fast-paced, very high energy, good guests, good subject matters. You can get to it by clicking on the Web Talk Radio link at xsquaredradio.com. If you're in a hurry, you want a 30-minute program that really punches you between the eyes with facts and a good, emotional, connected, scientific stuff, this is the place to go. The reason that we're pushing this, the reason that we want you to go there, we want you to click on it and send your friends there, is because this is the syndicated energy that is going to get X Squared Radio onto the airwaves. Yes, we will still stay on BBS Radio because this is where we were born. This is where you reach us. This is the true free speech right here. And we've been here now almost 5 years. And we're tickled to death to be here. And we'll never leave. But if we go syndicated on the airwaves, we can reach more people. And we get to play at night with the 800-pound gorilla, which is why we're all here. So click on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio and listen to the short 30-minute version. Put it on your iPod Touch or on your MP3 device and listen to it. The more you click, the better our chances. And that's also pretty good entertainment. Again, if you want to join us tonight, off planet, 530-413-4511. On planet, anywhere, on planet, 530-413-4515. And I'm going to say west of Earth, 415-762-1161. All those work, and you can join us tonight. So let's get at it. 40 seconds. We'll be right back with X Squared Radio. In the early days of World War I, strange craft began appearing in our skies. While we were flying at 100 miles an hour in something made of dope and lightweight wood, with a radial engine bolted to the front, belching oil and shooting in between the blades at each other, these craft were whipping past us at Mach 12. We called them UFOs. Soldier pilots called them Foo Fighters. Not since 1,500 years ago, when the Maya carved the beings and their craft into stone, have we seen anything like this. So, we love to talk about UFOs on this program, but we're going to approach it from a little different standpoint tonight. Because the argument has been put forth, and of late on Science Channel, History Channel, Discovery Channel, there have been almost back-to-back programs, one of which recently on the History Channel released just this year, just very recently, FAA tapes from the tower with airline and even military pilots, the actual tapes. Now, I guess the main question people ask is, why? Why would they release this information now? What, you know, these are things that go back 10, 40, 35, 2 years. Why now? Why is this information coming out now? Because, Earth Explorers, it is real. And when leaders of the present world come up against the legacy of the past, that's what we do here at X Squared Radio. This is where the past meets the future. This is where the lessons, the mistakes, the mysteries of the past, and the imagination, the dreams, the challenges of the future meet right here in the present. This, as we say in the racing industry, is where the rubber meets the road. Because if it doesn't, you don't even get a smoky burnout. You're just burning gas. You're not going anywhere. The result is black operations. How do they keep the people in the dark while they either consort with or plot against visitors from other worlds? Better yet, how do we talk about such things on this program without getting into the conspiracy behind the realization that what we are about to discuss tonight is what happens when secrets go too far? What happens when lifting money out of the public purse isn't enough to keep everyone in the system fat and happy? You can't get rid of everyone. What happens when the leaders run out of money? What happens when the needs of the people get to the point where you really need to take it to the next level? You really need to step in and help people. You need to bring assistance to small business, assistance to technology, assistance to those people that might be out of work. How do you go to the next level and help them when the purse is empty? Because whoever's been robbing the cookies out of the jar has gone just a little too far. We're going to the jar this time and there's nothing there. We're going and we're finding that, unfortunately, all the cookies are gone. There's a few chocolate chips in the bottom, and that's it. Everything else is missing. How do elected officials, who really aren't in control of this at all, they realize that the budgets for which they are ostensibly responsible, for the one that they're making bills and approving executive orders and vetoing or not vetoing, those things, you know, those appropriations things, they're not really in their control. And even the ones that are in their control are only pennies on the dollar. What happens? How do they put that in their public appearance? We're going to play for you tonight something you may not have heard before. According to our research, not many of you have heard it. I want you to be prepared, because what you're about to hear is a short documentary. We'll interrupt it from time to time to discuss. But you're going to hear about 10 minutes of information that's been put together in a way that's going to excite you. It's going to make you wonder. It's going to make you realize how long we've been fighting this battle and who knew about it and perhaps what price was paid. Be prepared. Here we go. Hang on.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
When President Kennedy made the speech in 1961, little did he know we were already there. At that time, there was already a lunar base on the moon, consisting of a joint alien, American, and Soviet Union base of 36,000 people, all of which were Aryan by birth. This massive facility located under the Jules Verne crater was operated by a group within the NSA known as Blue Moon. Then on May 22, 1962, a secret space probe landed on Mars, which confirmed life could be supported. Soon after, a colony of over 500,000 occupants was constructed below the Martian surface. But how this all began takes us back to 1917, when members of the German Thule Secret Society channeled messages from extraterrestrials in the Aldebaran system. They received instructions on how to build a device which would harness the power of the Vril, or the Black Sun. These secret teachings spawned the Black Sun Secret Society, the Vril Secret Society, the SS, and ultimately the Third Reich. These occultists understood how to harness the energy of the Black Sun. According to Sumerian occultism, the sun illuminates the exterior, but the Black Sun is an invisible beam of light, which illuminates the soul of man, which is the divine light. They all understood the coming of the golden age of humanity was at hand, and the changeover from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. When Adolf Hitler learned of these secret teachings, he realized the world would have to change to make way for the new age. His version of a Third Reich drawed on leaders from these secret societies, with their emblem being the Black Sun. Together, these occultists became obsessed with building a prototype flying saucer powered by the energy of the Black Sun. By the end of the Second World War, Germany was in possession of a secret weapon which resembled a UFO. Known as the Vril and Hanabu 2, these crafts could travel at Mach 12. When rumors of these technologies began leaking out of Germany, the Allied forces became worried. According to Vladimir Turisky, the Bulgarian-born engineer and physicist, these crafts would launch from a secret base in Antarctica and then would travel to a small lunar outpost on the moon. But even more incredible, he revealed that the Nazis landed on Mars in mid-January 1946 after an 8 months of a heavy flight with a basically volunteer suicide crew of Germans and Japanese and a giant 230-foot diameter dreadnought, again running on free energy, basically the Hans Kohler converters of gravity energy into the electromagnetic energy of the flight. After the war, Alan Dulles, Wild Bill Donovan, and George H. Bush were busy locating and these Nazi scientists to implant within the U.S. military-industrial complex. This was known as Project Paperclip in Odessa. Once firmly implanted, they continued their secret experiments under the watchful eye of American military. In 1947, with the crash at Roswell, New Mexico, President Truman created a secret study group to investigate the alien presence.
I just wanted to break in here and let you know that Project or Operation Paperclip was actually led by Admiral Byrd. It occurred in early 1947 when several ships, also loaded with aircraft, and by the way, this was post-World War II, these were battle-hardened, highly trained troops that had already gone through World War II. They were veterans. They were well-trained. And the ships were, at the time, the most advanced that we had in our Navy. And when they went to Antarctica, it was because there were several U-boats that turned up missing off the inventory and were actually spotted refueling on their way to Antarctica. And what happened was there was great suspicion that high technology had been taken from the coasts of Norway and from the highest echelons of the Nazis down to Antarctica to build a base that they had been supplying all during World War II, sort of a safe house, as they were buried in the mountainsides of Norway, safe and sound all during the war. When things wound down and the war was declared at an end, these U-boats snuck out. One went to Antarctica, one went to Brazil, and the other went to New York, scuttled off the coast of New York, and sunk in the Hudson Bay, later probably salvaged. Paperclip was designed to go down there and root out these Nazis from that area. What they encountered there, ostensibly, were flying discs with Luftwaffe markings on them. As the planes took off from the aircraft carriers to engage the craft, every time they fired upon the craft, they were cut to pieces by laser cannons. That's right, laser cannons in 1947. Several ships were sunk, airplanes were cut to pieces and dropped into the sea, loss of life. But as soon as the aggressive moves stopped, so did the defensive moves from the Nazis. And so the Navy, this highly trained fighting force led by Admiral Byrd, went to Brazil, licked their wounds, and came back unofficially to the coast of Southern California. And Operation Paperclip was a long time being hidden. What happened, and this is according to Aaron Kaplan, who we had on this program a couple of times. He has an excellent book out called Frightening Conclusions, which I highly recommend you reading. If you missed his interviews, please go back, look him up in the guests list, and listen to the interview. What happened was the force field that he claims is being generated on the moon to protect the Earth, to sort of form a prison shield, as it were, to keep the ancient Anunnaki imprisoned on this planet, the ones left behind, they attempted to leave the planet. And what happened was they crashed into the shield, and they ended up crashing in Roswell. And that's why you hear Paperclip, and then you hear Roswell in this this documentary. So we're about 3 minutes into it. Let's continue.
This eventually became known as Majority 12, not Majestic 12, as the hoax documents analyzed by Stanton Friedman suggest. In 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower consulted with his friend Nelson Rockefeller about how to deal with the alien issue. Rockefeller suggested he set up a think tank to investigate the issue. Bypassing Congress, President Dwight Eisenhower issued the secret executive memorandum NSC 5401/1, which contents remain classified under the National Security Act.
Now, this is key. The reason it's key is because the president, the executive, and by the way, it's unknown if the vice president was involved in this, the executive, with what's known as an executive order, bypassed Congress. Why did he bypass Congress? It's because the budget is approved by Congress. And so a new budget was about to be formed. And this is where these black operations began. What was begun by the president wasn't controllable by the president, as you will soon see. Here we go.
These think tanks brought together the most brilliant minds. It was literally a who's who of scientists and elites representing members of the Executive Council of the Bilderberg Group and the Council of Foreign Relations. This decision was the worst mistake of Eisenhower's presidency. And on his farewell address, he issued his final warning to the American public.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
MJ-12.
So this is where the term military-industrial complex. Now, these are speeches that presidents make to the public, okay? This is where the idea that I've generally started something I can no longer control is what he's trying to say. You know, Eisenhower himself was a general. He came from the military. He understands the way that it operates, the secrecy with which it must conduct its operations. And by secrecy, I mean they keep secrets from the soldiers, they keep secrets from the enemy, and they keep secrets from Congress. And they also keep secrets from the president. So when he took off his bars and he put his hands on the Bible, he hung his stars in his trophy case, he, too, became not privy to what was going on in the military. And Majority 12 began to grow in power. Here we go.
Determined that humanity was not ready to accept the alien presence. They also realized that humanity would not be able to survive past the year 2000 at its current rate of destruction. They determined that provisions would have to be made to ensure humanity's survival if a catastrophic collapse of the world civilization would occur. This was known as Alternatives 1, 2, and 3. Alternative 1 would relieve global warming by detonating nuclear bombs in the stratosphere. Alternative 2 would build vast underground networks of cities and tunnels. Alternative 3 would colonize other worlds. MJ-12 ultimately decided to build underground shelters and pursue the colonization of other worlds. In 1954, under Project Sigma, the National Security Agency made first contact with the gray alien extraterrestrials. Soon after, the Grijalva Treaty was signed, which would allow the United States government to trade technology with the ETs and to backward engineer in underground bases. In exchange, the ETs would be allowed to abduct people in a limited manner. MJ-12 knew funding of such a large and expensive facilities would require enormous funding. To prevent any congressional oversight, MJ-12 determined a secret source of funding would be required. At first, money was channeled from the national budget. When this wasn't sufficient enough funding, MJ-12 recruited the young George H. Bush from Zapata Oil Company to smuggle in cocaine and heroin for the CIA. Today, the CIA brings in over $2.5 trillion annually for the black budget. In 1963, when Kennedy first learned of the alien president's drug trafficking problem, he gave an ultimatum to MJ-12. If they did not cease and tell the American public the truth, heads would soon roll. Kennedy planned to inform the American people within the following year and ordered them to implement his decision by then. Because Kennedy was not a member of CFR, nor did he have knowledge of alternatives 1, 2, or 3, his decision struck fear in those in charge.
Now, before we get into this conspiracy, I want to let you know, I don't necessarily condone this. This isn't my idea. But since I can see that not many of you have heard this, this speech that President Kennedy, former President Kennedy, is about to give, that I'm about to play on the program for you, is going to reveal some language. We're going to carefully go through this language because, as you know, when you craft a speech, and in these days they didn't have teleprompters, you read the paper, the speech that you prepared. You craft the language, and if you're a good orator, which Bush was a terrible orator, but his speeches were unbelievably eloquent. But President Kennedy was a great orator. And he was a good speechwriter, and he had good speechwriters working for him. He was zealous. He was passionate. He was also in the minority. They really didn't want him to run for president. They didn't want him to win because he was Catholic. And this was seen as possibly bringing a little bit of, revelation, a little bit of conscience to the office. And that's not something that we have been dealing with in the previous administrations, because we were dealing with enemies that didn't have a conscience. If you remember, when Winston Churchill was elected prime minister, he had been defeated in earlier elections because he was just too aristocratic. He was just too, an alarmist. But when his worst fears came to pass, the people said, well, I guess old Winston Churchill was right all along. Let's elect him prime minister and let's take care of business. This is where the term stiff upper lip came from. This is where never, ever, ever give up came from. And sure enough, in the time that Winston Churchill was prime minister, the English people adopted that pragmatic style. They adopted that stiff, cold, you will not do anything to deter us. We'll go down into our bomb shelters. You can indiscriminately terrorize our cities with nighttime bombings, with all kinds of strange weaponry. And when the smoke clears, we're going to come out, sweep the streets, and have an ale. And this is where it came from. But after the war, a different kind of mindset came in. One of exploration, one of immense prosperity. My goodness, if you were alive during this time, you would have felt it. In the early 60s, you could do no wrong. It was like the roaring 20s with unending amounts of money. There was land to be had, homes to be had. Things were inflating right and left. You could buy a car for $2,500, and I mean a nice one. You could get a great job, and you were getting raises right and left. Prosperity was everywhere. We called it a boom, not because, just because soldiers came home and were happy to see their wives and their girlfriends. We called it a boom because things were happening. Things were growing. Growth was unfettered. It was unrestricted, unregulated in every direction. And that passion is what elected Kennedy to office. That passion is what he brought to the leadership. And it wasn't well accepted. But the language that he crafted in these speeches, the things that you are about to hear, is what I want you to pay close attention to. These are the things that are important. This is the point of this lesson. Here we go.
So the policy committee of MJ-12 made the decision to have Kennedy assassinated. Kennedy was murdered by the Secret Service and MJ-12 agent who drove his limo. All those who witnessed William Greer shoot Kennedy were murdered within 2 years of the event. Only Jackie Kennedy was spared through fear and intimidation. The truth is, the Warren Commission was a farce, and most members were also CFR members.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people.
Now, what we have listened to here, if you'll listen to the words very, very carefully, He said we're dealing with a monolithic. That means one rock. One rock. Now, I'm not trying to do any numerology, no play on words, nothing like that. I'm just telling you, for a president to take to the airwaves and tell the American people that there is a conscripted government that covets, that doesn't elect, it subverts. This means that it crafts in the darkness its leadership, that it buys its influence. It doesn't elect its influence. It doesn't play fair, not through debate and open discussion, hardly. Its agenda is created. Its budget is taken by force or by craft or by dealing in illegal commodities, pulling the government deep into trading weapons for drugs, trading influence for money. And believe me, in the next 40 to 50 years, the peddling of influence for cash will become a multi-billion dollar business until finally the confidence of the American people in its own presidential elections erodes to almost nothing. Here we go.
Confidence that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Since that time, MJ-12 and the secret government have become increasingly more and more powerful. America was given a space program, but NASA was for public relations only. The real space program was still being operated covertly by the military. Then in 1972, the secret space program was reorganized under the CIA and is known as CSS, or the U.S. Central Security Service. They now operate the facilities of Area 51, S4, Area 52, Pine Gap, and Area 53 in the Woomeran Desert, Australia. Their arsenal of craft included the TR-3B Astra, the TR-3B Chameleon, the Aurora SR-33A, the Lockheed Martin's X-33A, the TAW-50, and Note 128 craft, which means not of this earth, and the newer Northrop Quantum Teleportation Disk. The older crafts could travel in speeds of Mach 50 and above. Using quantum entanglement, the newer quantum teleportation disk is known to teleport instantly anywhere in the world and has cloaking capabilities. These disks are used for covert military abductions and chipping of individuals who know too much. In UFO lore, this is known as a NELAB, or military abduction. The good news is, today there is a covert war going on between the CSS crafts and the Russian Federation Cosmospheres. In addition to that, the Galactic Federation of Light is also working to contain or neutralize the problem. Soon the Khazarian Zionist Bolshevik plot to create a new world order will be no more.
Well, hold on. Here we go. A little technical error. No problem. Everything's under control. Okay, so you heard a couple of things there that were pretty important. One was that the CSS was at war with a Russian consortium, and that may be happening. There are people out there who are talking about wars that are going on extremely high altitudes. I mean above 150,000 feet in altitude. And there are reports of very, very fast aircraft. And of late, there have been reports of UFOs in the strangest places. One was over Beijing, shut down the airport for 4 hours. Images flashed around the world in a matter of minutes. And this is where things become uncontrollable. The internet right now is valuable and it's also risky. It's a wonderful blessing and it's also a point of exposure. So it's easy to use the media. You know, you can leak certain things, you can encourage, you can fund certain movies and certain ideas to sort of soften up the people, to sort of, you know, put the truth out there in a science fiction way so that when it really does happen, all the government has to say is, oh, you mean like in that Spielberg movie? I think you've been watching too many movies. But if it really is real, and they really are sort of faking the real thing in the movies, then Isn't it the most clever disinformation program that you could possibly imagine? And of course, if you make that case, they just say, oh my goodness, you really are stretching. And when was the last time you saw Bigfoot? I see. Okay. However, we're not talking about movie budgets here. We're talking about the killing of presidents. We're talking about the manipulations of illegal contraband in exchange for not billions, trillions of dollars in revenue. Hidden revenue, revenue that the taxpayers never see. While Americans are struggling for unemployment benefits and struggling to make their mortgage payments and not struggling with inflation, well, maybe, prices are going up slowly, but their wages are not. Many people haven't had a raise in half a dozen years, if they even have a job. Others are underemployed with the skill levels that they've achieved, upgrading their education, and also improving their skill sets through hard work and study on the internet with the largest library in the history of the world. It makes the Library of Alexandria look like a bookmobile. We have a vast society of underemployed people. They're underemployed, they're frustrated, they're worried, and they don't want to lose the job that they have, whether they're working at a restaurant or whether they're working as a factory worker or a junior engineer. They have to wait for someone above them to retire almost in order to get a job. Small business, I'm sure, like it's being used in vain by the president almost every single day. There may have been joint alien Earth missions to the moon, and the evidence is mentioned in warnings and the deep language that was placed into President Kennedy's speech. He is telling us directly there are secret societies out there. They are powerful, and they're more powerful than elected officials. And when the elected officials get close, well, then they either have to get new elected officials or they have to manipulate the elections and get the ones that they want. And this is a case we're going to make very shortly. But there is still the dichotomy. We still have the public show and tell. We still have the NASA dog and pony show that the public sees. We see the space shuttle launches. We see hydrogen peroxide rockets and solid fuel boosters being used to push 7 or 8 people into space on a regular basis. We see, or at least we think we saw, what was the mission to the moon and the first walk on the moon and subsequent ones. But were we so amateur back then that we had to fake our public participation of the space program? I mean, when it comes to using man-made materials and man-made technology, in the early late 60s, 69 when we got there, we didn't even have computers. The computer that was in the Apollo was a little bit sort of a cross between a digital watch and a calculator, more close to the digital watch. It overloaded with simple radar information coming into it from the moon. Ostensibly, the Eagle was flown by hand and landed on the moon. However, there is no video evidence, no filmed evidence of a successful manipulation of the Eagle on Earth. So, not without a cable attached to it. So, what do you think they had in mind? That they were going to take a $1 billion risk on national television, live in front of the world? Or do you think they faked it? Do you think that they practiced it somewhere else? Well, let's see what happened. Let's listen in and see exactly what was going on there. We're not really sure how this happened, but here we go.
Is that the window here looks out onto a block here. There's another one here. They're curved. These are the screens onto which the lunar surface was projected as the craft made a simulated approach towards the lunar surface.
Is what we're seeing a mixture of fact and fiction?
It is fact. It is fiction. It's mixed together. hard to separate them until you examine it closely. If a spacecraft is in deep space, the only possible explanation for a light seen through the window of the spacecraft is the sun. It's the only bright light in space. If it's not the sun, then it has to be some other artificial light, which implies that that particular image is possibly fiction.
Now we're talking about one of the images that was ostensibly taken with a Hasselblad camera from inside the Apollo craft through the window of the moon. Now, in order for this picture to have been taken, there's a glare in the upper window frame. That glare had to come from the sun. But from the angle that the Apollo was traveling, the sun wasn't located there. The sun was located on the other side. So that glare had to come from an operational light in a studio. So we've had this discussion before. In fact, I think the first time we had it, we defended the lunar landing way back in 2005 with Dean Ford, if you remember. If you don't, you can go back and listen to that archive. It's somewhere back there in the deep archives of X Squared Radio. And we came to the conclusion that the moon landing really did happen. Of course, if you listen to my former mother-in-law, I guess it didn't. Here we go. Let's continue.
July 1961. NASA was soon being criticized for the flimsy construction of their hardware. The first orbital capsules did not even have windows in them for the astronauts to look out of. One of the most vocal critics was one of NASA's most respected astronauts, an all-American hero named Virgil Gus Grissom, who almost drowned when recovery helicopters were unable to lift his space capsule from the sea. After a successful journey into space, Gus Grissom almost died through NASA's bad planning. Or was this an early attempt to silence Gus Grissom? May 1963. Astronaut Gordon Cooper experiences re-entry problems in his Faith 7 rocket ship.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Roger, and lift off, and the clock is operating. That's the clock. Take my 7, Faith 7 on the way.
The prototype lunar module, known as the LIM, had serious stability problems. At this stage, there was no guarantee that even if NASA managed to get a spaceship orbiting the moon, they could land safely without killing the crew.
They're practicing with the LIM right now, and it's getting very unstable. And what happens is Neil Bohr... I'm trying to remember the astronaut's name while it's going on, actually ejects from the LIM while it crashes. So, we'll continue.
Could the footage which we see of the LIM approaching the moon be filmed in a TV studio?
It was filmed in a TV studio. There's absolutely no doubts whatsoever about that. And the way that this film was created was by the use of models. There's nothing secret about the models. They exist. You can go and see them today. The models were very lifelike, very realistic. There is one that is a life-size model. It's in Flagstaff in Arizona. It's 2 miles long, and it's an exact replica of the Sea of Tranquility. The photographs were used to create from those images the replica of the Sea of Tranquility, so that if it was flown over in a helicopter, it would appear as if it was a spacecraft approaching a similar area to land. So yes, all the scenes of the lunar surface were filmed on Earth.
So what we have here are photographs of the LHIM sitting on the moon, and of course, you know, many of these things have been debunked. There's no stars in the background. There are a lot of anomalies that don't make any sense. But that doesn't mean that the craft didn't go to the into space. It doesn't mean that we didn't eventually go to the moon. But we didn't want to risk the first one, not at that level. We just weren't ready to try it. So let's continue. Men walked in space, and they continue to do that now. They go outside, they fix things, they put satellites into
space. Extensive rehearsals at docking spacecraft were performed in low Earth orbit. Everything was recorded on film. This footage would later become invaluable as NASA sought to fake the success of the Apollo missions. Meanwhile, more problems occurred. On Gemini 9, the second spacewalk had to be cut short due to problems with the astronauts' oxygen supply. On Gemini 11, another attempt to walk in space was curtailed due to fatigue. Was this a sign that cosmic radiation caused nausea and fatigue? NASA could not risk the public humiliation of having brave astronauts crashing to their deaths on the lunar surface, broadcast on live TV. NASA's Nazis knew that a major catastrophic failure on the moon would cause the billions of dollars of funding to be immediately cut.
Now, this is the main thing that you need to pay attention to. As we draw this hour to the end, we will pick this up in about 4.5 minutes. So don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. Those of you that are trying to tune in, keep trying, because I know there are a lot of people listening right now, but believe me, we can handle millions. So keep going back. Channel 2, BBS Radio. Click on the Listen Live link at X Squared Radio. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio after this. So as we move into these times, we want to let you know that it's very important to stay prepared. You want to visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. This is where you get your emergency preparedness stuff. This is where you get your 72-hour kits, your water filter kits, your special first aid kits, things you won't find at Walmart. So get prepared. Go to 1-800-PREPARE.com. And by the way, when you're buying, put in the special code Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and get an extra 10% off. Remember, storm seasons are coming, winter's coming on, and the difference between summer and winter is really becoming drastic. So we're having wide swings in these extremes. Be prepared. Go to 1-800-PREPARE.com. Put in the code word Brooks and receive an extra 10% off. Also, remember to go to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. Get your ebook copy of Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. Doing so will give you a 25% off of the printed version. When it comes out, we'll let you know, give you a code by email, and you can purchase the printed version for 25% off. Have that on your shelf. Don't forget to go to webtalkradio.net, click on the link at X Squared Radio, and listen to the free short version, 30-minute versions of X Squared Radio. Tell your friends about it, because this is the road to syndication. So let's continue where we left off. We are talking about high strangeness and, as it were, conspiracy and a possibility that at least part of the space program might have been faked, because we have two space programs really going on. This is becoming more evident as we go into the next few clips. Oh, yes, we're bringing it up to modern times. By the way, if you want to be part of tonight's program here on X Squared Radio, I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. This is where the past meets the future here at X Squared Radio, where we study the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, where the past meets the future. If you happen to be off-planet tonight, you can reach us at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511. Remember those cell phone towers? The signal goes well out into space, so you can reach one from out there, no problem. But I do recommend staying low, because the Perseids are starting tonight. They'll peak on the 12th. If you really want to see them and you've got a dark sky, go out, get your sleeping bag, lay it out on the ground, and lay down somewhere where you don't have any light pollution, because you're going to see one about every 5 or 6 seconds. You should see up to 40 per minute, maybe as many as 200 per hour. Some of them will be as small as a piece of gravel, and some of them will be rather large and split in two and be yellow and green and blue. And you never know. You might hit one of those random ones at the size of a city bus, and you'll glance off of the upper atmosphere. But this is why you don't want to stay up there too high. So keep your craft a little low tonight. Tune in to X Squared Radio and reach us at 530-413-4511. If you're on planet, anywhere on planet, 530-413-4515 if you're on planet. And west of Earth, 415-762-1161. We're coming to you live from North Carolina, and if you're listening August 8th, this is live between 5 and 8 Pacific time. We are discussing the idea that at least part of the Apollo mission might have been faked, and this so that we can make this case this hour. So stick with us. Here we go.
Elementary grasp of science could tell that the Saturn V rockets were merely big versions of the Nazis' V-2 killing machines.
So as you see, they're quoting scripture from Genesis as they make this historic mission on the moon. It's being filmed. And this is the film that the world saw live on television. And so as we move forward in this case that we're making tonight, there are some very strange things that come to pass. Some pieces of evidence that make it apparent that the space program has been split. One of the programs is the one you see on television. It's the program that you see the debate budgeted on C-SPAN. The other space program is no longer a $170 billion program that you see as the space program. It's much more than that. Let's continue.
Gathering together of the waters called these seas, but God saw that it was good.
Wonderful footage of space travel and UFOs traveling beneath the space station at high speed. Large craft, some of them 1,000 feet long, moving at high speed underneath the space shuttle. And underneath the International Space Station. It's clear something else was going on in space. It's clear that either military operations had reached a point where they were running missions into space, or there was somebody else above our skies. So it's clear also that maybe we didn't want to lose control of the show live in front of people. You know, live TV make all kinds of mistakes. Some of it's humorous, but you don't want to have that kind of mistake. You don't want to have 2 astronauts or 3 astronauts die on the surface of the moon or above the moon, become stranded if something went wrong. And so perhaps at least part of the mission could have been faked. Part of some of the missions could have been faked. It's obvious that some of the equipment is on the moon because we shoot one of those reflectors on a regular basis with a laser and measure the distance between the Earth and the moon. And this is how we verify that the moon is actually moving away from the Earth at a small amount each year. We also can verify that the moon has some seismic activity going on, and we can detect when impacts from various things. Certainly the mission that we had back in October, the L-Cross mission, where we launched a large slug at the moon to see if there was water under the surface, but also meteor collisions with the moon. We hear and record that information. But while the public space program has become a sleepy little program of the 1960s, and I'm talking about the manned program, President Obama gutted the once lofty dreams of manned spaceflight. With money getting tight, one program had to go. Of course, Michelle Obama took a lavish vacation with 40 of her closest friends to Spain last week. Each one of the friends spending the night in a $2,500 a night room, and the airfare for Michelle alone was $148,000. Of course, the taxpayers picked up the whole bill, and it was their 8th vacation in 18 months in office. Sure enough, as luck would have it, it was the public program that got cut. Imagine that. Someone had to step forward to move the secret agenda forward while taking money out of the public pocketbook. Because the secret agenda was digging deeper and deeper into the purse. All the chocolate chip cookies were gone. NASA only got the chips. NASA got the crumbs. NASA got the press. NASA got to speak to the universities and to recruit grad students so that they could keep labor low. The technology transfer was about to happen. Someone had to send trillions in taxpayer confiscations to these dark agendas, even if it means the result is a single term as president. Time was getting short. It becomes impossible and globally destabilizing to remove presidents the old way. Now we have to put them into office with a mission in mind, something to accomplish. You can do anything you want in the public eye, but do this one term, and you'll be rewarded for the rest of your life. So what's going on? Let's see. What is going on? How do we explain what is happening? How do we adjust our lifestyle, our public appearance, our NASA appearance, our presidential appearance with what's really going on? Well, you're about to see. This is President Obama telling us.
The Obama administration's vision for NASA has touched off such a heated debate because of what they have planned for the agency.
And liftoff of Discovery.
This is a watershed moment for NASA. It's an abrupt departure, a dramatic departure from the way they've done things in the past.
Gone is the Bush administration plan to send astronauts back to the moon by 2020, a $110 billion project called Constellation that the government has already sunk $9 billion into.
Liftoff!
Gone, too, is the space shuttle, which the Bush administration had ordered into retirement by the end of this year.
Atlanta's on its way.
For the next 5 years at least, NASA will be out of the business of launching astronauts into space.
U.S. astronauts are going to be forced to hitch rides on Russian Soyuz rockets to and from the International Space Station at more than $50 million a seat.
Good afternoon, everybody.
The administration is promising to build a new rocket for deep space exploration. And while a manned mission to Mars is still a goal, there is no timetable. Former astronauts, including Gene Cernan and Jim Lovell, are slamming the plan. In an open letter to President Obama, they urged him to drop this misguided proposal.
Transitions are always difficult.
But one administration advocate, Apollo 11's Buzz Aldrin, now pitted against his peers. He says Americans have already been to the moon, and the focus needs to shift.
People with patience, with an open mind, and the willingness to listen would understand that this is a doable, exciting program.
The Obama administration says revamping the country's goals in space will create 2,500 new jobs, but not enough to match the 7,000 that will be lost when the space shuttle stops flying. Jeff Glor, CBS News, New York.
So the important thing to remember here is that we are facing another brain drain. If you'll remember, when the Apollo mission ended in 72, we had two complete launch vehicles sitting on the launch pad. They were paid for already. They were built. They were manned. All the man hours and technology had been put into those launch vehicles. They were sitting there. The primary crew was trained. The backup crew was trained. And the American people were ready for it. Behind it, there were also Russian craft that were ready to go, sitting on their launch pads, sitting in their hangars, ready to go. And all of a sudden, without any public explanation whatsoever, the program ended. No more manned flight to the moon. It was as if something behind the scenes had happened. The NASA plan to go to the moon, the NASA plan to harvest the technology, the learning, the incredible solutions and challenges that had been overcome in the previous 20 years were about to be thrown out the door. And the brains that put all this together, the greatest brain trust in the history of the world, was about to be dissolved. These men and women that had learned to work with one another, learned to design things that had never been built before, overcome challenges like the Van Allen radiation belts, overcome challenges like solar flares and radiation, landing on another planet, emergency plans, backup plans to those emergency plans, communications plans, and the ability to expand a presence on the moon that could offer greater security and greater ability to explore the rest of space, all of a sudden came to an end. Thousands and thousands of the smartest men in history were dumped onto the market to become high school teachers. One was my industrial technology teacher at Western Kentucky University. So all of this happened, and it's getting ready to happen again. And so we're wondering, what is all the money for? What are they building? Where are they going? Why are they going there? What advanced world or off-world society are they working with? And why are we satisfied with the high school science fair called NASA when there is clearly something else going on? As if reacting to public pressure, there appears to be a technology transfer that's about to happen from secret government labs to private tech labs. It also seems that the authority to fly in space is moving from military hands to corporate hands. You heard this in Obama's speech. Because we're moving away. We're going to let the private sector now take us into space. Because maybe it's been those corporations all along that have really had the ability and the access to build this technology. They're the ones that have really reverse engineered it. They're the ones that have accessed this technology, adapted it to human capabilities and our elements and our engineering capabilities and made it work. These are the craft that maybe we're seeing in the air. These are the craft that maybe we're calling unidentified flying objects while they snicker behind closed doors and say, well, they might be unidentified to you, but we know what's going on. This level of technology transfer to for-profit companies simply will not happen. Only the Air Force and those with top secret clearances get to ride in space. Everyone knows that. This is a public and cheap attempt to placate the voters and stop the crying of government workers who face losing their jobs in a massive way. Definitely, like the tragic loss of the most capable brain trust ever assembled in history when the Apollo program was dissolved. What we are seeing is a public and cheap display of support with a few million dollars to the show-and-tell program, while the multinational secret mission to space receives trillions in yearly support. Yes, you heard me. Trillions in yearly support. So if we're not putting men in space on public TV, and we are to listen, or at least to pay attention, to the first documentary piece that we played tonight, 500,000 workers working under the surface of Mars. By the way, this has been substantiated by the work that Andrew Basiago has done and did when he was young, and now remembers after his revelation, his remembering of what he did when he was a young boy. All of this information is now being corroborated. All of this information is also being fed to the science fiction industry, piece by piece, article by article, concept by concept, so that when you find out what it is, when you suspect what it is, you, the public, you, the voter, you're the one who they're taking the money from your paycheck every week. And they're doing this with. And by the way, they're not just taking your money, Americans. They're also taking Canadians' money. They're taking Israelis' money. They're taking euros. They're taking yen. And they're even taking yuan. And they're compiling it into a multi-trillion dollar high-tech brain trust that is way beyond what you see in the movies. Way beyond what you could imagine. And what we're seeing is this happen right before our very eyes. And we're seeing the pieces of it in the press. We're seeing the pieces of it in these press releases, in these speeches. If you listen very carefully, you can hear what's going on. Yes, some of the information is there, but it's for public eyes only. And this is the watered-down version. If you listen to the words or you listen to what's said, you'll clearly see what's happening. And I can tell you this from personal experience. I'll tell you a little bit. I can't tell you a whole lot because I don't want to ruin what I'm working on with the electric vehicles. But I can tell you that what the government releases for public consumption and what we see are two different things. So pay close attention. Here we go.
Wow. outline his plan to rely on private companies to put Americans into space. CBS News senior White House correspondent Bill Plant has the story for us. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning to you, Betty. Back in February, President Obama killed President Bush's plan to put Americans back on the moon by 2020. And this has a lot of people in the space community very upset, including Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon. They're very upset about the loss of jobs, about the loss of American leadership in space. So today, President Obama goes to Cape Canaveral with new money and new plans for space exploration. The president is reviving the plan to build the Orion, a NASA crew capsule, but not to go to the moon. Instead, it will serve as an escape vehicle from the space station. He will speed up development of a single heavy-lift rocket that would have the power to blast a crew and cargo far from Earth. Budget $6 billion for NASA research over the next 5 years and extend the life of the space station by 5 years. With the space shuttle program about to end because of a decision by the Bush administration, President Obama will propose using private companies instead of the Russians to fly American astronauts to the space station. The administration says the new policy will provide 2,500 more jobs than President Bush's program to go to the moon. And also,
greater investment in innovation, more astronaut time in space, more rockets launching sooner, and a more ambitious and sustainable space program for America's future.
But CBS space consultant Bill Harwood says without a specific goal like Mars or the moon, the Obama program would be too easy for a future Congress to cancel.
It is a step back for manned spaceflight as we've known it in the past. It's a major change for NASA.
Many old NASA hands are very upset that what they've built over the years will now be lost. But the White House has another famous astronaut in its corner, Buzz Aldrin. Aldrin released a statement saying, "The simple truth is we've already been to the moon." And he says what this nation needs is a near-term focus on developing key cutting-edge technologies that will take us further and faster. Betty?
Interesting. CBS's Bill Plant at the White House. Thank you, Bill.
So what we see here is that now we're talking about a technology transfer. And by the way, I misspoke earlier. I said it was $170 billion a year. It's not. It's $170 million a year. You remember that this $6 billion is to keep NASA alive for how many years? Five, according to this CBS News piece. 5 years. That's about $1.2 billion a year. And that's not enough money to keep a program like that going, not for an aggressive space program like that. And by the way, just as they said, if Obama's a one-term president, he's going to be in office come this November. In 2 years, there'll be another election. And I would say that this election that is about to be campaign season, that's about to begin come Labor Day, between Labor Day and November, you're going to see a massive shift in support away from the president, away from the current occupants of the majority seats in the House and Senate. Now, it might not be enough to shift the complete voter majority, but it's going to be enough to do even worse damage to the president's agenda, if there is one. Than what happened in 1994 during the midterm election of the first term of President Clinton. This is when the Democrats lost control of the House of Representatives for the first time in a long time. Keep in mind that that was maintained until Bush Jr. Got into the White House. It was only after about 12 years of misappropriations and using war to build the economy and to seize assets around the planet. Make no mistake, the war in the Middle East is not about democratic ideals. It is about oil and the control thereof. That's why the largest air base in the world is being built where? Well, in Iraq, people. Yeah, the largest Air Force base, U.S. Air Force base, is not in the U.S., it's being built in Iraq, and it isn't to turn over to the Iraqi people, I can tell you that. No, we intend to have a permanent military presence right there in the Middle East to make sure a warm war or a cold war never comes online again. And yet a couple of days ago, we had Castro, yeah, the Castro, say, and this is headlines, that the U.S. is laying itself open for nuclear war. My goodness, when have we heard the words nuclear war last? I heard it when I was a kid, and now we're talking about that old Castro-Kennedy kind of conflict. Are we throwing back to the 1950s here, trying to scare people? Are we ready to huddle under our school desks once again? I don't think so. Nothing happens on the surface of this planet that isn't watched from space. Keep in mind, the X-37B is up there. I think it's got about 8 months left on its mission. Yeah, it's going to be in space for 9 months. And we don't even know what the budget was for that, and we have no idea what is being done with the X-37B up there. But it's funded by the Air Force on the Rapid Deployment Program. Unlimited budget, unreportable budget. The public will never know what's on that craft. So what's the money for? What are they building? Very interesting. This is what we can talk about as we go forward tonight. Off planet 530-413-4511, on planet 530-413-4515, and west of Earth, 415-762-1161. Give us a call. Let's talk about this a little bit as we go forward. What's going on? What do you think is going on? Do you think there is a false flag event really getting ready to form out there? Are we building a massive response to a friendly or unfriendly invasion by aliens? Some say they're hostile. Some say they don't exist at all. Some say they're friendly and benevolent. What do you say tonight? Give us a call. Let us know what's really happening out there. You've heard a couple of pieces tonight. We played them because, according to our research, they didn't get much airplay. Only a few thousand people heard those pieces. If you've heard it before, I'd like to hear about that too, because what did you think when you heard it? What did you think when you heard President Kennedy's speech where he was talking about secret societies and monolithic organizations that work behind the scenes using stealth, using conscription instead of elections? He was talking about presidential elections, people. He was talking about congressional elections. I can tell you from personal experience that the Congress can go to the bureaucrats and say, what the heck is going on here? We're saying one thing and you're doing another. And they slap their hands and tell them, you see that door out there that leads to the sidewalk? You better hit it, because we were here before you got elected and we'll be here after you leave. You have no authority in here. You write the laws, you fill up our checkbook, and then keep your mouth shut. We'll do with the money what we want to do with the money. Meanwhile, 1,800, that's enough to fill a very large building. 1,800 lobbyists are awash all over the Department of Energy, bought and paid for, hired, trained, tasked, and well-connected, well-budgeted by the oil companies. And there's almost as large, over 500 lobbyists. 500, that's a very large plant, people. That's a plant of about 500,000 people working 3 shifts a day, 7 days a week. 500 automotive professionals hired, bought, and paid for by the big three, now also Toyota, big four, crawling all over the Department of Energy. And their job is to soak up every last dollar of grants, loans, loan guarantees, and earmarks from the Department of Energy. That's why small business hasn't got a dime, not one penny of loan guarantees, loans, or grants. So regardless of what you're hearing in the press, the rest of it is the truth. And that's exactly what's happening in the space program. As you heard in that last piece, $6 billion allocated to NASA over 5 years for a Constellation program. This is an old-style rocket program. Yes, it's large. It's considered a heavy-lift vehicle. But, you know, we wouldn't have to go through all that heavy lifting if we were lifting from the surface of the moon. We also wouldn't be limited to a mere 18,000 to 25,000 miles an hour in space. My gosh, you might as well be watch molasses, you know, run down the face of a frozen wall. It's very slow in space. We've had ion drive technology since the days of Eisenhower. Since 1968, we have had ion drives available, working models that have been tested that can launch high-speed ions out the back of that rocket at very close to the speed of light. We can accelerate a heavy craft at 1G for a year. And at that rate of acceleration, at the end of 1 year, we'd be going 99.9% the speed of light. At that speed, we can get to a rather distant star cluster in about 6 months spacecraft time. Not our time. It would still take 10 or 12 years to get to that star system, Alpha Centauri in less than 5. But the next one in 10 to 12 years, our time, 6 months spacecraft time. Yeah, that's a little, a bit of a paradox. A 1.5 year mission there, 6 months there, or 2 or 3 months there, and 6 months back. And we're talking 24 years Earth time. So, parents that take off to these distant star systems would return younger than their children. But, it still is possible. So let's see what's going on out there. Bob from New Hampshire, you're on line one. Welcome to X Squared Radio.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. The last time I talked to you was a few months ago when we talked about the Mayans and where they disappeared to and that. Well, I am fascinated with your show tonight.
Well, thank you.
I've read about most everything you've been speaking about. And I found it quite interesting.
Well, what did you learn in your reading? We've kind of plopped a few little documentaries together, some YouTube clips and things to try to make a case here that there are really two space programs. One
yes.
for the public to fit in between the McDonald's ads and the other one going on behind the scenes.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's why we had the CIA and the in the drug business so they can get some extra money for this black op, things like that. Well, when you were talking about the space program to the moon abruptly stopped.
Yeah, what do you make of that?
I think I can explain to you if you read the book, Fire from the Sky, and it'll explain why the program stopped.
Have you read the book? Can you give us a quick update? I'll get the book. I'll interview the author if he's still alive.
All you'll get from the author is from one who knows. That's all you'll get from the author, from one who knows. And it's a fascinating book. And it's a true story, according to the author.
Well, and I remember Fire from the Sky, the movie that came out. This is ostensibly three guys that were in the woods in a pickup truck. One of them gets abducted and comes back telling a very strange story of
this is about the Indians, yeah. No, this is strictly about NASA and the space program and the shuttle program. That's all it is about.
And what's the author's name?
And
what's the author's name?
One who knows, from one who knows. That's the author. You can Google it, but I can send you the book. I can send it to you in PDF form.
Oh, okay. I would prefer to get a promotional copy from the author or at least have him get the royalties for my purchase of it because We're not too much into piracy here. We try to bring the truth as best we can and give credit where it's due. That's why we don't do like some talk show hosts where they actually cut out the person that did the interview, that did the reporting, and just mention their name. We really want to give them credit, so we play the whole thing here. But if there's nobody to give a royalty to, then and it's anonymous, then of course you can send it to me. I'll read it and analyze it. So yeah, what else do you make of it besides this black ops that, you know, fills up the conspiracy radio programs from late night to early morn? What's really going on? What are they building out there? Why are they building? What's the purpose?
Well, I think this, first, I believe that the Russian military is more powerful than the American military. Although we are probably 30, 40 years ahead in technology, ahead of the general public, the military, I believe, is ahead of the American military. And this book will explain why they are. It doesn't say they're ahead of us in military. It just tells you what they did to stop us from going to the moon. Samoa, you know, again.
The Russians were ready to go to the moon, too. And I think if we're talking about this space program, we're talking about the one that's going on behind the scenes, this multi-Mach, you know, 50-Mach space program. This is a multinational program. This isn't all American.
Oh, yes. But you mentioned earlier that we had gone to the moon before Kennedy was even president, before he was even aware of it.
That's right, 1962.
Remember at the program earlier in the program you mentioned it?
That right.
We were at the moon when Kennedy was talking about going to the moon. We had already been there.
Yep, we had. So, you know, maybe this whole idea of a fake moon program really doesn't hold a lot. Listen, now, Bob, thank you for the call. We got somebody else holding. Please call back often, and I'll check out that book, okay?
Okay. You don't want me to send you the different files?
Go ahead and send me the PDF, and I'll read it, and I'll get back with you on it, okay?
All right.
Thanks, Bob. Tom from Washington on line 2, welcome to X Squared Radio. How are you tonight? Tom. Oh,
yeah,
Tom, hold on. Come on, Tom, call back. I know you're out there listening. We want to hear
I'm
what
here,
you have
bro.
To say. Also,
Hello.
Our good friend Ramon is riding in from New York. I just want
Hello.
To see what he's got to say. I know he's probably out there listening. Okay. I think we got him. All right, Tom, welcome to the program.
Oh, you got me now, Brooks?
Yeah, there we go.
Hello.
Yep.
Okay, you got me now. So how you doing tonight, Brooks?
Well, we're doing fine here. We're talking about two space programs, actually. One that's going on in the public eye, the one that just got thrown a crumb or two at $6 billion for the next 5 years because public pressure from the nation's heroes, the astronauts, tore up Obama for doing away with manned spaceflight. When behind the scenes, there's multi-trillions of dollars being spent on another space program. So we want to know what your opinion of that is.
Well, I think it's going on another space program and a lot of other little secret programs they got going on. What do you think about the Gary McKinnon stuff? I mean, he came out with some pretty interesting statements, at least what I've been able to find on the internet about the U.S. Secrets, the Space Command and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know. I know that, you know, his exploration of hacking into various secure databases was under the influence of marijuana. I guess he gets paranoid. You know, people that do that drug for a long time get paranoid, and then they kind of do the drug so they can go out, and some of them do it just to go to the grocery. But he obviously did it so he could surf the net. Didn't keep a copy, of course, just kind of remembers what he saw, but obviously he did it, and now they're trying to extradite him to the U.S. And what he says he remembers is not only inflammatory, that the fact that he saw plans of a UFO and maybe something called the Galactic Federation, but it has really grown into its kind of own cultural phenomenon. So what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think there's, you know, I kind of see where there's smoke, there's fire. I think he might have tapped into some kind of information that he wasn't supposed to get. I'm not exactly sure on the way everything's been kind of taken its own life and grown out of it, but you know, I don't know. I think he might have got into some information that was not supposed to be found about our secret space program that we do have going on. I'm sure of it, but I don't know. Trying to get this information out or trying to get information from our government's kind of futile. You know, the Freedom of Information Act stuff is a joke. They're not going to give you anything that they don't want you to have.
Well, so, I mean, the Freedom of Information Act only applies to the government. What we're talking about here is a multinational private contractor, private corporation group that is consuming trillions of dollars from China, Russia, Europe, and Canada and the United States. Now, that's a tremendous amount of resources, and we've often said on this program, if we're going to mount a manned colony somewhere on another planet, it's going to take resources well beyond that capable of a single nation. The thing that upsets Americans, the things that we're trying to get out on this program, is that while Americans are struggling for work and small business is being used as, I don't know, ice cream ads for the president's popularity numbers, they're really not getting any money. All of the money, and I mean billions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money, is being funneled to these projects. Big, big corporate private industry. What are they doing with it? What are they building? What in the world are we planning to do with Earth?
That's a good question. Okay, Bucks, I know you got Ramon on the line. Let him know I said hi. Hi, Ramon. This is Tom. I met you there at East City. So, anyways, yeah. I'll get off here and let you get on to some other calls. And great show tonight. Keep this material coming. I love it.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
So anywhere on planet, by the way, if you're, if you happen to be off planet, I'm going to warn you, though, the Perseids are in full bloom by the 12th. They're already showing up, so you've got clear skies out there. Get out there where you're away from the city lights. Get yourself a sleeping bag, put it in the back of the pickup truck, get you somebody warm who you like or are interested in, or who is interested in the same things you're interested in. Lay down and look at the sky tonight, because you're about 10 p.m. your time, you're going to start seeing these things come in from the west at about 140,000 miles an hour. Leftovers from a Swift-Tuttle comet, the head of which long since disintegrated, but the tail is far a lot of real estate. We're talking about a lot of real estate out there in space. So lots of gravel and bits of rock and ice and things out there that are hitting the atmosphere. You should be able to see a pretty good show tonight. They started showing up just a tad early and brighter than usual. So not to disappoint, you should see at least 40 or 50 an hour, maybe as many as 40 or 50 a minute at certain peak times. So if you're out there off planet, you might want to tone down the altitude just a little bit. Get a little closer in, especially enough to reach a cell phone tower. And that tower for you would be 530-413-4511. 530-413-4511. Please have your translator working, because only English is working in the studio tonight. So you're going to have to translate on your end. Anywhere on planet, 530-413-4515, 4515 if you're on planet, and west of Earth, It's 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161 if you want to be part of the program. We're talking about the realization of two space programs existing. Why is this important? It is really important. If you'll remember, those of you that are as old as I am, back in the 60s, we had a president that was elected that came to office with wonderful dreams, and he challenged us as a nation. He said, we're not going to do it because it's easy. We're going to do it because it's hard. And Sputnik kind of embarrassed us. After World War II, we came home, licked our wounds, and started having babies. And business was good. Booming was an underestimate because the car industry was booming. The home building industry was booming. The textile industries were booming. Writing and movies and everything you could think of was roaring like it was roaring in the 20s. You could do no wrong. Hardly any stock went down. Everything was going great all the way up until the mid-70s, and then nationalization of the fuel supplies happened in 1972, and I thought the world was coming to an end when gas went from 29 cents a gallon to 60 cents a gallon. Holy cow, everything was going to come to a stop. But we'll cover the rest of that in a minute because our good friend Ramon is online too. Welcome to the program, Ramon.
How's it going, Brooks? And it's now Ramon from Japan.
Ramon has relocated. That's right. He was getting on a jet and heading east. So he's now working in Japan.
It's now 11 a.m., so I have to wake up a little early to listen to your show now.
On Monday, because it's Sunday night here. It's already Monday there.
I'm in the future.
Well, you're only 1 hour in the future because we're on daylight savings time, but in October you'll be 2 hours in the future to us.
That's correct. A lot of the information I heard earlier, I've actually heard before, for the exception of Kennedy's speech. I've never heard that speech before in my life.
Yeah, and that was a new one for me. As I was doing this deep research, I found this speech from Kennedy, and I thought, wow, he really did mention this monolithic secret society. He really was talking about the confiscation of the public trust and the use of it by forces unknown.
Let's not forget that he was the second president to say something like that. It was said differently, but pretty much the same thing.
Eisenhower,
if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, we played that, where he talked about the industrial-military complex. You remember, though, he was a general himself. So he knew about this military complex. He knew about the, maybe I'm not going to call it unauthorized use of funds, but let's just say the president didn't have a need to know funds that were used by the military because it was anything to win. And, you know, the whole idea of winning kind of got clouded too, because it was actually the Germans' bomb that blew up in Japan. And for a long time, the Japanese and Germans were working together against the United States. At least that's what we thought. And now we learned in 1962, they landed a craft on the moon. The Japanese and Germans working together. Then it's the actual Germans' bomb put into an American casing at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, lifted into the air, taken to Hiroshima, and dropped on them. Now, these lines of loyalty are really blurring here. And we're just seeing how crazy this has gotten.
That's actually not surprising because, I mean, you see that on a smaller scale between, like, criminal families where they'll stab each other in the back. So on a bigger scale, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. Sacrifice Tony Two Fingers.
As far as the whole space program, it's going to have to come to the point where we're going to have to really do this on a grassroots level. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, it's really going to have to, because other than that, we're never going to get disclosure. if we wait for somebody else to do it, we're never going to see ourselves in space if we wait for them, you know, to do it.
Well, this whole idea, I mean, where does Porterhouse steak come from? It comes from grass. It comes from the sun. So what they're talking about is carving up the steak and going to dinner on our grass. We're the grass. Yeah. We're the ones that feed the beef. We're where the beef is. But, you know, grass isn't very smart. We kind of live blade by blade, day by day, paycheck by paycheck. We know who we vote for president doesn't make any difference, especially now. For crying out loud, the news releases and press releases that we hear every day are all, you know, hidden language and talking about small business this and small business that. What small business? These are billion-dollar corporations that are getting our tax dollars. What jobs are being created? Are you crazy?
Yeah. No, it's one of the reasons why I'm over here.
Yeah, exactly. Things got bad in New York, and they're better in Japan, so off Ramon goes.
Yeah, and it's just astonishing. I'll give you an example, not to veer off, but I went to IKEA here in Japan, and I brought something that would cost, $18,000 yen, which will come out to like around $180. And when I look at the difference, it actually cost me $219. Just to show you how the dollar has dropped so much, where it sucks using the dollar overseas.
Hai wakarimashita.
I'm sorry?
I said, hai, wakarimashita. That's Japanese for yes, I understood what you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, you just threw me off there. Yeah.
And here at X-Squared Radio.
I
was going to say, here at X-Squared Radio, we like to say, watashi wa kono shigoto ga suki desu. That in Japanese means, I love this job very much.
You actually sound a little more advanced than me.
Well, どうもありがとうございました。
どうもしまして。But, as far as the whole space program, any of us who went to ESETI, and hi Tom, by the way, I do remember you, I know that those objects we were seeing at ESETI were not, part of the secret space program. And the only reason why I say that with 100% assurance is because I'm 100% sure that if you see a spacecraft and it's not what you see as you experience yourself, Brooks, it's what you feel. And I highly doubted that any of those human pilots that are flying these things are able to send the amount of appreciation and love that you feel off these spacecrafts. Especially that one, what was that, Saturday or Sunday at ESETI, July 4th weekend?
Right, right.
Do you remember that? And that's why I've had friends ask me, like, how do you know that's not a secret space program? I said, because it's not what you see, it's what you feel. And that's how you know it's not a satellite. That's how you know that these things are not, government issue. They're not part of the secret space program.
Yeah, when they come in that close, they have a way of broadcasting a signal to you, which you pick up with, let's just call it your spirit, your soul, your heart. You just, you pick up something, and it's not just you. There are 200 people in a circle, and they all feel it.
I mean, for me, that was a day of epiphany. But this is why I keep saying that I feel that we can start our own space program, because I know that they're constantly downloading stuff, and then you think of an idea, and I know you've had this happen to you plenty of times. You think an idea and you're like, where the hell did that come from? because that's not even in my
exactly.
in my paradigm, that thought. So where are these ideas coming from? And that's why I think that, yes, we don't have the budget, the multi-trillion-dollar budget, but I feel that we don't really need a multi-trillion-dollar budget.
Well, maybe you know, not somebody's got to build that stuff, and they got to, you know, they got to put Wheaties on their table. They got to build a house and buy a car and stimulate the economy and make jobs for other people that build the stuff and make the clothes and shoes and make the movies and everything that they consume. So it's all part of the economy of the world. These black ops don't go to people that don't spend money. They spend money. That's how we know that the money's out there. Is this method. But it's got to be a mission of Earth. It can't be a mission of these forces that have obvious military designs.
Yeah. But the big question, Brooks, is how do you even recognize something like that when everywhere you look, it's like, there's nothing there. What are you talking about? You know, and as soon as you question it, you're the crazy one. You're the one that doesn't know what you're talking about. Even though you set all this evidence on the table, and it just gets pushed aside. Like, I don't see what you're talking about. You know, it's like, wait, what about this? This isn't that. That's all your imagination. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Like, that's some serious detective work for you just to throw that out. And say, because, I mean, if this was a criminal investigation, they would have been found guilty a long time ago. And it is, but no one's recognizing it.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And I don't really know the answer. I mean, how you know, obviously grassroots people can't come up and take control. We can't revolutionize people. We can't have a revolution. We have to do it with our votes. We have to do it with our money. We also have to do it as employees of those organizations, because you know it's. As my producer says, you know, it's a funky world. We have these conspiracies where people are holding down these jobs, and yet they're asked to do the very things that we're talking about here tonight. They're turning wrenches. They're burning torches. They're fabricating alloys that are used in these very craft that we're talking about. And yet they're told you have to keep it secret.
Oh, they told us or something else.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's completely what's the word?
Compartmentalization.
Exactly. And they probably don't know, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. So, you know, you're touching the trunk and the other guy's touching the leg and it's two different animals.
I got it. Well, listen, I appreciate the call, Ramon. I'm trying to get one more in before we get to the top of the hour.
Not a problem. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, brush up on your Japanese. We'll talk again next Sunday.
Hey. Arigato gozaimasu.
Arigato gozaimashita. Okay, we have time for one more call. I think Steve is holding out there. Steve from San Diego, welcome to the program.
Yeah, doctor, I know I'm really interested in your program tonight, and I more or less believe everything that you brought out at the beginning. There's one correction. The Operation Paperclip was a program just to bring the German scientists into the U.S. It was Operation High Jump that Admiral Byrd was in charge of that went to the Antarctic. That's the only thing I noticed. But I recall it took the U.S. approximately 2 years after the end of the war to restart the V-1 and V-2 programs in the desert in the Southwest. And coincidentally, that's the same amount of time that it took It was at the same period that the UFOs were seen over Mount Rainier. That was the first post-war sighting that was widely publicized. I don't know if you remember
that's
when
coined flying saucers.
Yes, that's That's where the term was coined. And if you think about it, what big aerospace company is located close to Mount Rainier?
Would that be Boeing?
That is correct. That's a company that specializes in airframe construction. And that would be my guess is what this Kenneth Arnold saw. He saw a renewal of the German program, which took him approximately the same amount of time that it took for them to restart the V1 and V2 testing in the Southwest. And I imagine it was Boeing that was chosen as the aerospace contractor because they had the most experience in metallic airframes. They were the ones who built the first B-17s and I think the civilian metallic aircraft, if I remember right. But I believe they were chosen to do that, and it was coincidence that it was seen by someone. But it was kept secret, just like everything else. It's been under wraps, and now the big question is, you know, you mentioned that Operation High Jump. Well, if the Germans really had a base there in Antarctica, then why haven't we heard anything more of it? Why did they have a base there? It doesn't make sense to me. But I've heard of that. And I know there is a lot of information surrounding it, but I don't think anybody can ever get anything solid on it.
Yeah, I have problems with it too, because in 60 years' time, Antarctica has really increased in size. Not only that, not only has the continent itself increased in size because of the ice flow, but multinational military and educational presence there has gone up. Oh my goodness, they have whole cities down there. They have big airstrips where they land every single day. All kinds of universities send co-op students down there. We have a space telescope down there. There are a lot of operations going on down there. And I can tell you, not much goes on that southern continent the polar continent down there without military surveillance. There's a lot going on, so I hesitate to believe that there is an active saucer contingent down there. However, I got to tell you, the absence of UFO sightings and reports from down there is highly suspicious.
Well, as I recall, there was a lot of things going on down there. I think the Russians were working around that Lake Vostok at Antarctica, and then we had a base where there was some kind of a problem. They said it was a health problem. Later on, there was rumors that there was almost a revolt occurring at the base where some people disagreed with the government policy or something. I just recall hearing that. I think that was in the 90s. And I didn't hear anything about it after that. But the people were brought back to the United States for medical care. What really happened is a secret up until this very day.
Well, you know, it's a sad thing that we come into question and we doubt the press releases that we hear, like the ones where we hear today that billions of dollars are being given to small business for green technology. That's just utter nonsense. So we hear that they dug into a lake underneath the Arctic ice called Lake Vostok, and there's some kind of ancient bacteria there. They don't want to let it leak into the air, so they're restricting access to it, and certain people have been flown out for health care. And it's funny, you know, even those people down there go, wow, is that why Bill and Susie got flown out to get health care? Well, gee, I hope they're okay. And the whole thing is all misinformation.
Yes, that's pretty much what I believe. I believe they put out false stories. So, you know, it's so hard to know what's really going on. All I know is that we're not getting the truth. But for what reason, I have absolutely no idea. The German scientists during World War II that was working on the on the Flying Saucer Project was named Victor Schauberger. He was actually an Austrian. And what he did, he did something illegal that he wasn't supposed to do. He sent back a lot of the records back to his own house of the secret projects that they were working on. So that is how we know about the project today that he was working on. And supposedly his craft hit the inside of a hangar or something. It rose off the ground and hit the inside of a hangar. But he was the one that supposedly tapped into the ether, just like Tesla did here. In other words, he was drawing energy. And the theory is that the universe is not empty, but it's filled with electrical plasma. So this is the reason that, you know, they have these tests with the rabbits that can sense when their bunnies are being killed or something, that there is an actual electrical connection between all living things. But Victor Schauberger was working on that, and he got into it because he was a very good observer. He liked to watch phenomena in nature. One of the things he noticed was that when he would walk in the forest is that the fish could jump a lot higher than could be explained by their muscle power.
Right.
They would be able to go upstream, and he noticed that they would always go in circles, and he thought that spinning objects would do the same thing. They would increase the energy that is derived tapping into some unknown force. Anyway, that's the theory he worked on, and he became somewhat successful at getting to that research. So his son now, I believe, or it's either his son or his grandson now, in the town of Bad Ischl in Austria, he allows visits to the home where they display a lot of the things that his father was working on once a week. It's something like every Thursday or something, and you can go in there and look at the papers that he illegally sent back to his home that he wasn't supposed to, but it gives a concrete testimony to the work they were doing, where the other people who were involved with the program just all disappeared. Mita that was working on, and Habermal, those people all just disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to them. So
wow.
All we know is, or we suspect, is that I called in a couple of weeks ago, and I said that General Patton was in charge of the last U.S. offensive of World War II, and he went into Czechoslovakia when he really wanted to go to Berlin, but he was sent there to pick up the papers from the Nazi experiments and work that had been done during the war. And so he was eliminated shortly after World War II. I would be really interested if there are servicemen that were in that operation that are still alive. Because if they had gotten rid of the head of the operation, who was one of the best commanding officers America ever had, because he had a loud mouth or insecure lips, then I can imagine that they eliminated the others slowly and surely over the years. But I would be really interested if someone would come out. That operation of going through Czechoslovakia was the Disney movie, if you remember, The Miracle of the White Stallions, because Patton was a cavalry officer, and he loved horses. And it came that he came upon these horses that the Germans had quartered in one of these towns in Czechoslovakia, the Lipizzaners, which were the old Austrian cavalry mounts that the emperors of Austria used to breed.
Right, yeah, and, beautiful horse, born black and mature white.
He's the one that saved them and brought them into safety after the war. So anyway, that was only part of the operation. I only mentioned that because that was a side issue of that operation. But the main part of the operation was to gather those records and bring them to the United States. And I believe they were successful. They got there about 2 weeks before the Soviets did, because the Soviets were pushing in from the east and were heading for the very same area. But the U.S. got there before. So anyway, those are the only points I wanted to bring up, but I just thought I'd see what you think about it.
Well, you know, I do see the struggle between the two former superpowers, the Soviets and the U.S., for this kind of technology that gave advantage in the air, advantage in space. And as the Soviet Union came apart, I have trouble believing that the leadership that was the ideal leadership for the Soviet Union also fell apart. I think that they may have survived, and they may, even though the nations now got to work separately and under their own budgets and kind of follow their own dreams, the men that put that together, the resources, the thinkers behind that, the brain trusts that were the Soviet Union, they all survived and now are working with this multinational, I'm just going to call it off budget. I mean, they're just not accountable to anybody. This massive consumer of cash from taxpayers from literally all over the world that are creating this budget, which we call a black budget because it's so dark it doesn't show up on any kind of ledger whatsoever. And now the requirements for this budget have become so large that it's biting into the dog and pony show program we call NASA, and they've been thrown a bone of $6 billion for the next 5 years to do something they call the Orion program, more chemical rockets, not taking advantage of any of the ion drives or subliminal drives that we have researched and now ostensibly have perfected. The idea that we have two space programs, one that's quite capable of interplanetary travel and maybe even interstellar travel, and the other one, which can barely get 220 miles into space without killing somebody every few years.
Yes, I believe that. I mean, I completely believe that we have already gone to the moon and from the craft that we had originally, and that we're way out ahead. But it's possible that Kennedy didn't even know where we were. I mean, these are people that are above the government. They are the people that are really running the country. And I believe it's a combination of the Federal Reserve and the CIA that is really running everything in our nation. But sadly, if you ever read the autobiography of Woodrow Wilson, he named that as his greatest regret, that he signed the Federal Reserve Act. He was talked into it by his advisor, George, I think his name was George Mandel House, and this was a way for the people who were already in control in Europe to gain control of the monetary power in the United States. And
a resurgent of an idea that Hamilton brought over, the idea of a national bank, was blocked by Jefferson. It was actually very divisive in the colonies, because the colonies struggled for cash. Europe was cash heavy, and they wanted to form a national bank. They also wanted to have a national lottery, both of which they put into the Constitution specifically blocking. So it really took presidential power to get something very close to a national bank, although it's not run by the government, called the Federal Reserve Act. But they got it.
Yes. If you read Andrew Jackson's autobiography, when he wrote a few things at the end of his life, he considered the greatest thing that he did in his life was to stymie the plan of the central bank in the United States. He took the funds out of the Bank of the United States and put all the funds into the state banks, and then the federal bank went bankrupt. He considered that the greatest triumph of his life. And he had a lot of other accomplishments. I don't know if you know, but he's the one that really conquered Florida for the United States. And he had it under complete American control already, but then they went out and bought it. The State Department made a goodwill gesture to Spain, and they gave them money for it. But it was really Andrew Jackson who went down there and took it. That was after he had been successful at the Battle of New Orleans. You know, he went down into Florida because in Florida the Indians kept crossing the border to attack Americans in Georgia. And the resulting end of it was that he gained control of Florida for the U.S. But he considered it the greatest act of his life that he kept the power of the Federal Bank from becoming reality. And unfortunately, if you want to take Abraham Lincoln did the same thing. He went when the North was fighting the South. The British were actually hoping that the South would win because they knew what they wanted, the cotton, and they wanted the South to be independent. And he went to the banks, and the banks offered him 34% interest. So he went to one of his friends. He said, I don't think I'll take the 34% interest. He asked one of his friends who was in banking what he could do, and he told him, I forget the name of the gentleman right now. It may have been Morgan, but I don't want to say for sure. But this man told him, well, you have the authority in the Constitution to issue your own money. And so that's what Abraham Lincoln did. Instead of accruing debt of 34% to the banks to fund the armaments of the country at that time, Abraham Lincoln actually collected the interest on all those debts for the country itself. And so the North became even more prosperous at the end of the Civil War than before the war started.
Well, so not only that, it was the confiscatory.
This was a case where he thwarted the plans of the central bankers. And
if you remember, the whole cause of the war was the confiscatory tariffs that the North was placing on the South, because the South made surplus cotton, couldn't trade it to the North, so they traded it to Europe for finished goods. When those finished goods came back into the country, the North put a tariff on those goods. The South didn't want to pay it, so the North put a blockade on them. And it was the running of that blockade that actually started the Civil War at Sumter.
It could be that that's how it started.
That's not what started, according to my son's third grade teacher. According to my son's third grade teacher, it was started to free the slaves, which I think you'll agree was not the cause.
I'm sure it's never as clear as it is in the history books. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, Steve. Listen, I really appreciate the call. Make sure to put us on speed dial for next week.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye, Dr. Greg.
Goodbye. We've got a couple of people out there hanging. Great, great history buffs. By the way, Steve, great call. Thanks for the history. I love to get into that stuff. I love to stay as current as I can on American history. Western civilization is really a curious history. As you know, history is written by the winners, but you go at it from a philosophical standpoint. You look at the sociology of it, even the anthropology and developmental forces, both economic and social, that took place at that time, and you see how war could so easily have been avoided. The United States would not have had to gone through its bloodiest war. More Americans died during that war than all the other wars. We would not even have had to fought it. We would not even have to have that blotch on our national history with the right diplomacy and the right planning. We were at a point where we were coming of age as a nation. We were expanding into the territories, just like we are now. We're expanding into the territories of space. And right now, we're doing the same thing that we were doing then, except, of course, we're not tariffing aliens that are bringing things into this world, unless, of course, we're doing exactly what Bob mentioned, that we're sharing the human gene pool involuntarily to the aliens to beef up their gene pool and maybe even create a hybrid race that can exist here on this planet and on their planets. Soul carriers, as it were, in exchange for the transfer of technology. It just seems strange to me that they would transfer the technology to government, because it really isn't government that's in charge of the world anyway. When they say, take me to your leader, I don't think they need to be in D.C. They might need to be in London, but not in D.C. They might need to be in the Netherlands, but not in D.C. There are leaders of the world that are both political and economic leaders that don't make up the leadership that we call our U.S. government. And that's maybe wherein lies the problem. It could be that, you know, we're thinking about things too much from a national point of view, from a patriotic point of view. We're thinking of it in terms of Russians and Chinese and Japanese and Americans and Canadians and Mexicans and so forth. But maybe we should be thinking about this from the point of view of Earthlings and working together. Now, I'm not saying we should dissolve all the borders, far from it. But we need to make the quality of life in all countries at least relative to one another, so that we don't have people pouring over borders of less fortunate countries into more fortunate countries. Let's go ahead and help the less fortunate country have the infrastructure. I mean, come on, we got government in a box. Just add water, people. Just add tequila. Boom, you got a government. Let's send in a government that works and get the people to get their own country prosperous again from an agricultural point of view, a natural resource point of view, an educational point of view, and certainly an economic point of view. Because I can tell you right now, they don't want to pour over from Mexico into Texas. They don't want to pour over Mexico into Arizona. They have to. They have no choice, or they're not going to live. And that's just the way it is. You can't stand on one side of the fence and watch people eat steak on the other side of the fence. You got to do something about the people on the other side of the fence. Alex from Missouri, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brooks, this is Alex.
Oh, so good to hear your voice, my friend. I'm sorry, I must. Is the call still out there? Okay, well, if he talks, we'll let him call back in. It's no problem. We're not going to take a break between hours 2 and 3. We're well into hour 3. We've got about, 17, maybe 22 minutes. We might be able to stretch it, if we get a little bit. We got to make room for the, next program to come on. We have exactly, 10:30 Eastern time. So it's 7:30 Pacific time. We've got about 30 minutes. Go ahead and call back in, Alex. We'll cover it. Alex is a longtime listener, and we've known each other a lot longer than I've been on this program. So he always contributes in one way or another, either writes me or once in a while he calls in. He's always a great contributor, and we appreciate him. And as we appreciate all of you, and by the way, thank you so much for the calls tonight. From time to time, put these little mini documentaries together. We study the information, and then rather than just talk about it, we try to bring the actual audio from former presidents and congressmen and even current presidents so that you can have the most current information and also the most accurate historical information. And maybe we can talk about the future in an intelligent way that doesn't offend. Although, you know, we don't mind offending as long as it's an intelligent offense. And if you feel strongly about it, we want you to give us a call back. By the way, we have about 30 minutes left. If you are off planet, Be careful out there, because the Perseids are winding up in strength here. They're going to peak on the 12th. So be careful in the high altitudes. Those things are coming in about 140,000 miles an hour. It's a little hard to get out of the way. But if you're off planet, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. Special line just for you, 530-413-4511. On planet, anywhere on Earth. We've even had calls from Japan tonight, 530-413-4515, and west of Earth, and I think we just got a call from Missouri, which would be west of Earth, 415-762-1161. Bob from New Hampshire, welcome to the program. Is Bob back? I think he wanted to. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I went back up to find the script, and there you have it. Don't you love internet radio? It's live. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. I could pour water down the wrong pipe and cough right here on the radio, and you would hear it. That's what's wonderful. Nothing is edited. Nothing is scripted. We're just rolling with it, and you get the energy of it. You get the fire of it. We're also going to pick up that book, Fire from the Sky, from One Who Knows, and we're going to find out about the Apollo program and bring some more information to you. And I doubt that I'm going to make it over to Austria to visit Victor Schauberger's house, but maybe there's something written out there, and we can bring it to you. We also have technical challenges ahead of us. You know, humans are not really built for this planet. We don't have enough body hair. Our bones aren't strong enough. We certainly can't run. We don't have teeth. We don't have claws. We get by on our intelligence. We get by, although I still question some people's intelligence. Believe me, I was out on the road today, and my gosh, I can't even describe, you know. It's just unbelievable. Too much going on in the minds, you know. Some people are like Tinkerbell. They can only think of one thing at a time. And they're driving. And that's dangerous. I just can tell you. Saw cars on both sides of the freeway. On both sides of the freeway. So I'm talking about emergency lanes on a fast lane. Emergency lanes on a slow lane. On both sides of the freeway. North and southbound. Stopped on the side of the road. Like, I got on the freeway and I forgot to get gas. Jeez Louise, people, come on. So, we have technical challenges ahead of us with going out into space. We have relatively short lifespans, like about 2 milliseconds compared to the average, space rock. I mean, microseconds. Extremely small amounts of flash of existence, one mortal life, compared to cosmological time. But I think that the intelligent life that is here from other worlds realizes that too, and they've got an ability. They have a technical ability to move so that they do not age. That being said, I honestly think that they've cut off communication with the homeland, because if physics are physics, they are now much younger than their home world. Even if we sent astronauts into space with these ion drives going out to planets like Alpha Centauri, yeah, it's 5 light years away. That means in our respect, it takes light 5 years to reach it. But we know that as we approach light, time becomes asymptotic, an asymptote. It is a mathematical flattening function. Since time becomes curved, it's no longer straight. You sort of take a half of a half of a half of a half of a half. And the distance, the changes get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's like you never get there. But what happens is spaceship time, accelerating at 1G for about 4 or 5 months, you could actually achieve speeds high enough so that spaceship time slows down. That is to say, for the astronauts in the craft, only a few months would go by, 3, perhaps 4. We could make Mars in a matter of 3 to 8 days, whereas now it takes us 3 months. And much of that would be weightless with conventional chemical technology, because we'd be blasting along at 30 or 40,000 miles an hour. But with ion drives, we could accelerate in a linear fashion, have real gravity, because we would be accelerating toward the rear of the craft at 32 feet per second per second. It would be exactly like standing on Earth. You would weigh just exactly what you weigh here. Even the internal plumbing, your muscles, your bones, everything would work just like they're designed to work, just like they do here. We would accelerate at 1G, and then we would turn the craft around and decelerate at 1G. You'd have gravity almost the entire trip, and you'd be there in fraction of the time. Your ship time, but relative to Earth, it would actually take 5 years or longer to get there and 5 years or longer to get back. So you'd get back. You would have aged a year, but your kids would have aged 10 years. So therein lies the disconnect with the home world. And maybe that's what's happening to the intelligent life that's here. They're here to stay, people. They are residents. And some of them have been here longer than our colony has been here. And they'll be here after our colony is gone. And hopefully it doesn't go, because America is an ideal, not necessarily a country. The idea behind it is that there's hope. We have technological challenges, yes. But we also have social abilities. We have social abilities to grow. Look at what we've done in the last 100 years. Come on, we've gone from horseback to jets. And in the next 100 years, we're going to go from jets to who knows what. Maybe we'll be scrambling our molecules all over the universe and reassembling ourselves in another place. Maybe we'll realize what this quantum entanglement is, and we can move instantaneously through at least space that we understand, the way Andrew Basciago was talking about. Maybe that really is possible. Maybe it will become more commonplace as we understand it. Maybe we don't have to strap people to chemical rockets and launch them into space. What is disheartening, what is disappointing, what is frustrating, is to see over 10% of the population of the United States, the most prosperous country by far in the world, out of work. We're sitting at home wondering when we're going to lose our home, not if we're going to lose our home, when we're going to lose our home, when are we going to be able to buy a new car, when are we going to be able to buy a new laptop, when are we going to be able to buy a new house, when are we going to be able to put our kids through college? Not if, because we don't have the money, because there's no method for us to get the money. We can't work hard enough because there's no one to work for. And what has happened is our government, and I'm not talking about just the White House, I'm talking about the government he runs ostensibly, our government isn't doing for us what it's supposed to do. It's not taking care of the general welfare. And that doesn't mean write more unemployment checks, for crying out loud. It means create jobs. It means create opportunity. It means provide the bootstrap that these small businesses need to get started. Small business, according to the banks and investors, is risky. And it is government's responsibility to take that risk. Why? Because even if they take the risk on a handful of entrepreneurs with a good idea and a strong back, the money still goes into the local community. It still goes to buy bricks and mortar. It still goes to buy vehicles and homes. It still goes to buy computers and fax machines and phone lines. It still goes to stimulate the economy. And maybe, and there's a good chance of this, maybe they will be successful. And if they're successful, they're really going to be successful. They're going to go from being two guys and a truck to being a national organization. They're going to go from being a homemade donut shop to a publicly trading company. They're going to go from a tiny electric car company making a few hundred cars a week to a big car company making tens of thousands of cars a month. Why? Because they have the drive. Why not? Because they can't access capital. And that is the responsibility of government. And ultimately, it's your responsibility. Yes, because you are the grass. You're the grass that feeds the cattle, that makes the steak, that makes the reward for everyone, including government. You, as the grass, have to get a brain. You got to get a heart. and you got to get guts, and you got to tear down the curtain and run the wizard off. That's what you got to do. You have to realize that this is all a bunch of smoke and mirrors. What you're hearing on the news is not what is happening. Pouring $6 billion into NASA over the next 5 years is a game. It's a game show. It's nothing more than a Hollywood set for you to let you think that we have a space program. The space program we really have doesn't look anything like that. The small business program doesn't look anything like what you hear from the White House. It doesn't look anything like what Secretary Chu or Undersecretary Christine Johnson tells you. It's nothing like that. It is a complex system of payoffs and paybacks. It's a complex system of lobbyists and favors. And this is the kind of thing small business cannot do. We can't afford lobbyists, and we shoot ourselves in the foot if we go to Washington and try to lobby. What we do is what we do. We make textiles. We make batteries. We make cars. We make home improvements. We make software. We're the ones that drive the ideal called America. And that ideal needs to spread over the borders into other countries. You want 13-14% of America to go home? You want Hispanics to go home to Mexico? Hey, so do they. So if they have a reason to go home, they'll go. If they have a way to make a living, they'll go. When I talk to people that are from Mexico, they say they have to work for a month for enough money to buy a television set in Mexico. They can work for a day here and make enough money to buy a television set. And most of the ones I talk to, they're farming during the day and washing dishes at night and sending half their income home. How many of you do that? I would say none. How many of you are willing to go out in a field when it's 105 degrees and pick pickles or tomatoes or cabbage, which have to, by the way, be picked by hand? How many of you would do that all day long and then come home and wash dishes or make hamburgers or sew clothes? None, I suppose. It's not a matter of work. It's a matter of quality of life. And I will honestly tell you from the bottom of my heart, they would rather be doing it from home where they grew up, just like you want to be home where you grew up. But you can't sit on one side of the fence eating dust when people on the other side of the fence are eating steak. Something is wrong with that equation. America is an ideal, not just a country. That's not just my personal opinion, but you heard about it here on X Squared Radio. What we're talking about tonight is the idea that there are really two space programs. One that you get to see on the news, and one that is really happening, the one that's really making the ships out there that are flying at 14,000 miles an hour and taking a left-hand turn. One is strapping a dozen people to a chemical rocket and launching them into space with everybody at Mission Control's fingers crossed the whole way, like it's some kind of game of chance that we try to mitigate through design, when we have very advanced technology that we can't afford to show the general public. Why not? Are you afraid? Why not? Because if that kind of technology were released, we would not be shoveling our planet into our gas tanks and burning it. We would not be dropping uniforms over the heads of our kids and sending them into foreign countries to become killers, to come home with physical and psychological injuries that will last for generations. We would not be forcing an ideal onto our kids, or shall I say a moray onto our kids, that dehumanizes an enemy. And instead of using words like kill, we use a trit, like we're talking about you know, reducing the number of fleas in our carpet. We're human beings, and we're living on a single planet in the blackness of space, and there's no other planet like her for light years in every direction. Let's take care of it. It makes sense to stop burning oil. Oil can be used for a lot of things, including the case to that laptop you're listening to this program with, including the fibers that make up the fabric that drape your body right now, including the polish that covers the nails that you're biting right now, including the pen that you're holding and making notes from this program, that iPod that's sitting there. Everything that's on your desk, from the rubber eraser on the end of your pencils to the fabric and foam of the seat you're sitting in right now, comes from oil. Please stop burning it. If you will demand another way of getting to work and back, of getting to the store and back, of getting to the mall and back, I'm talking all the short trips. The long trips, okay, we got to use gasoline if you're going to take off for 1,000 miles. But if we could switch all the short trips over to electric, believe me, the planet would respond. And that's what I'm talking about. If you want to take control of this other space program, which right now it appears to be, according to two presidents, both Eisenhower and Kennedy, and now Obama, recently talking about, what we're talking about is a military-industrial complex. I know you hear that word a lot on conspiracy shows, but it means something different here. What we're really talking about is an industry that is operating like a government. And it's not supposed to be that way, people. Remember, you're the grass not to be walked on. No, you're the grass to absorb the sunshine and feed the world. And that's the most important point we want to make tonight. So as you prepare to meet the week, if you're listening to this show as an archive, working on your favorite project, congratulations. We appreciate you, because the archive subscription that you have is what keeps this radio program on the air. And if you're listening to it, I'm sure you have friends and family to want to listen to it too. Come on, $2.50 for 1 month, $20 for a whole year. That's less than the price of a cup of coffee per month. And there's over 500 hours of archives on the net. If you can't get ours, you can get BBS Radio's. And it wouldn't hurt you to have subscriptions at both places, because you got to keep the lights on at both places. You know, the money all goes to the same place. It pays for airtime so that you can hear this program with the high-quality sound, and you can have access to it as an archive. So the secret space program, I'm going to read this note from Alex, who tried to call in. Evidently, he's just a little bit too far out off planet, not enough boost to get back. Although I got to say, from the few words that I heard from him, his universal translator was working. Here's what he says. I was going to talk about how I think the secret space program might have been, what's that to keep our eyes on? The sky looking at unidentified aircraft. So their financiers can abscond with acres of arable farmland and forest land across the United States to build four huge 10-lane highways that Americans have to pay to use, impeding our interstate commuters and reducing our nation to the level of feudocracy with a monarch called a president. Laugh out loud. So I guess we're talking about the toll roads that are being built cross-continent. I don't know if you understand the mission of those, but they will become toll roads, and these will be the roads that private traffic takes place on. Only the other freeways will be available for government use only, authorized vehicles only, okay? The movement of goods and military services around the country. Most of the freeways, those traversing coast to coast and those going north to south, will become toll roads. And it is the income from those tolls that will pay for the highway programs. Actually, I kind of like the idea. Not so much the government control, but those that drive the highways ought to pay for the highways. And that's the way I feel. I love toll roads. I think they're great. I don't pay for a road I don't drive on, but I do pay for the road I do drive on. And it makes sense, even for electric vehicles, because face it, we're not going to pay a gasoline tax. There's no gasoline engines in an electric vehicle. So how do you pay for the highways? Simple. Tolls. Every time you get on the road, it's a quarter or 50 cents. That's wonderful. All those nickels and dimes gather up, and it pays for the road by the very people that are tearing it up. It's called a use tax. And that way you don't charge the people that don't drive the road, and you charge the people that do drive the road. And believe me, a lot of state roads have been paid for this way. And some have been paid for many, many times over, especially in the northern climes, where the weather is very terrible on roads with the freezing and thawing and heating in the summertime. As you know, asphalt roads grow tremendously. And as they grow, they mash. And as they freeze, they contract, they crack open. They get water in, and the water freezes and breaks and pushes that apart just like a glacier would. And it's like someone's magically digging the potholes. Well, that's where it comes from. And the big trucks, those 80 and 90 and 100,000 pound trucks, oh, I'm sure no one ever runs overweight out there. Those are the ones tearing the roads up. No, it's not your little Crossfire or your little Civic that's tearing things up. It's the big trucks. But still, a use tax makes a lot more sense to me. And that's just the way I feel about it. We appreciate you being a part of X Squared Radio tonight. Don't forget our sponsors. One is 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. We want you to go there, and when you go there and buy your 72-hour kit and your first aid kit, please put in the code word Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you'll get an additional 10% off. The more you go there, the more we can stay here. Those of you that have bought Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years or are getting ready to buy Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, you're going to need an audio CD. It's made by Maureen St. Germain, MaureenStGermain.com. You can also click the links at RememberingTheFutureBook.com to get your copy or at ArkOfMillionsOfYears.com. And that's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, ArkOfMillionsOfYears.com. That's a 1,500-page series of books on 2012, and I have it on very good authority, on account I'm the co-author, that Volume 4 is about to come out. Yep, all those things that we predicted that would come true in the first three volumes, guess what? They came true, and that's what Volume 4 is about. You're going to get all that and more by tuning in to X Squared Radio. Glad you are here. We'll see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.